The pool that lends Dublin its name is black even in summer. Easterly winds carve runes across its murky waters, airborne curses that blow in with the fast-flowing river, reeking of sea salt, bad oaths, and 10 generations of dung. Gray clouds trap the stench with their rain-heavy bellies, forcing it down onto the town's palisade, onto watchtowers and rooftops and masts swaying in the harbor. Melcorca has lived here her whole life, 15 years and counting, but each time she descends from her father's long fort, fleeing the walled sanctuary of his hilltop fortress, the town's lower-class reek punches her right in the nose. This is how she remembers it now. Before, though, she is drawn down to the narrow streets, the markets, the wharf, constantly, relentlessly, in ways even now she can't quite explain. What possesses her to keep sneaking off like this? What drives her, Mearkjartan's prettiest daughter, away from her private chambers, where the floor is daily strewn with fresh watermint and vervain, the bedstraw laced with lice-killing lavender, the sconces flickering with sweet beeswax candles? What pushes her, the High King's precious first child, away from her spinning and sewing, away from ale-swilling and coffer-filling future husbands, away from her young, ambitious brothers, not yet men, either of them, but both are bright and sharp as silver brooches, both will succeed their father, each in their own time, but neither will surpass him, Melcorca thinks. No one will ever dub them the Hector of the Western world. No one will kiss her head as Mearkjartan does when he's home, nor pat her fair cheek and, smiling, call her Kjaran, little dark one. No, she can't really explain, now or later, what sends her scurrying from all the pomp and privilege of royal life. What makes her slum it down with the human sludge here in Dublin town? While the pond's rot spills like offal through the skinny lanes, the coopers bend oak staves into barrels, cup makers turn maple into beer vessels, chandlers conjure light from tallow, and skin sellers writhe warmth into lonely bodies. Breathing through her mouth, she passes a yard overspilling with midden. Pigs scuttle ahead as she ponders, their fat black rumps bouncing, trotters churning the path into curds. There's only one reason she could get her head around, really, and it's nonsense. It's just a gut feeling, impulse, a visceral urge to escape. How she regrets giving in to this stupid whim. With a crack, the clouds split their seams and within seconds dump their loads. No foreplay for these sky giants, just a quick spit and then it's full torrent. Thunder beats a drum across the heavens, the thrum and boom echoing in from the sea, the sound swelling as it pounds inland, soon roaring down the An Riotec River. Shouts from the waterside become screams on the wood quay, become terrified shrieks in the town. Soon and too late, the wharf bells clang. Soon, local warriors are howling for Mearkjartan, her father, Mearkjartan, to fend off the attackers. Soon, foreign swords are slashing sinews and tendons. Soon, they're being sheathed in Irish flesh. Soon, absurdly, as cold rain and cold steel shears down on them all, there's fire. Run, Melcorca hollers, the sky streaming into her eyes. Run, she yells, practicing what she preaches. Run, this way and that, run, feet slipping, heart rabbiting. Where is he? Where's Mearkjartan? Where are his men? Run home, her gut implores, but she's come too far now. She's too far from the fort, from hill and hearth. She won't make it there before the raiding sea wolves swarm up Wine Tavern or Cook or Fishamble Street, before they snarl and snap and swallow everyone. Oh, how she regrets tricking her beloved nurse this morning. Father needs you, Melcorca had said, or something along those lines, something vapid but reliable, knowing Valgard would drop everything, chores, gaze, skirts, to please him. Rumor has it they were lovers once, a king and his concubine, though the old woman refuses to admit it. But there's some spark there, some tenacious ember burning in Valgard's stout chest, and Melcorca was only too happy to fan it. Now she'd do anything to be back inside, working the loom with Valgard beside her, sour cheese breath whistling through the great gaps in her teeth. Now she'd give anything for her nurse's company, her protection. But no, no, now more than ever she has to run. She has to go. She has to escape, her soul screams. Escape, escape. As she flies past smashed doors and smashed stalls, past a ragged army of booths, 20 or 30 of them pegged in a makeshift market, past linen tarps and tents sheeting with flames. They've got oil, she thinks. The heathens somehow have oil. And she sputters through the squall and the smoke. She skids around one corner after another, searching for the small chapel she thinks is nearby. It's over there, isn't it? Beyond that smithy? Or no, it's at the end of that lane. But she's turned around now. The sky's reeling, the mud's dipping and bobbing beneath her feet, and she crashes into a shoeless thrall stuck there with a barrow, pushing it deeper and deeper into a rut. Its load's so wet now, he may as well tip it. Skin dark as his expression, he swears at her, her, Mirkyashin's first daughter, and in that instant the slave grows a spine. His back is straight and his neck free of iron. He won't bow for anyone but his gods. But maybe, Melkorka thinks as she yells, go! Maybe his gods don't recognize him now, up to his shins in filth, chained to some richer man's barrow, pointing and cursing at some wild, storm-drenched woman. But then, some other man's fingers gouge into Melkorka's upper arm, thick and solid as whalebone, and she knows who the thrall's really been cursing. Behind her, the Northman huffs once.